A reading from the Gospel of Matthew, Matthew 27, verses 1 through 2, 15, 26. Early in the morning, all the chief priests and the elders of the people made their plans how to have Jesus executed. So they bound him, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate, the governor. Now it was the governor's custom at the festival to release a prisoner chosen by the crowd. At that time, they had a well-known prisoner whose name was Jesus Barabbas. So when the crowd had gathered, Pilate asked them, "Which one do you want me to release to you, Jesus Barabbas or Jesus who is called the Messiah?" For he knew it was out of self-interest that they had handed Jesus over to him. While Pilate was sitting on the judge's seat, his wife sent him this message, "Don't have anything to do with that innocent man, for I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him." But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas and to have Jesus executed. "Which of the two do you want me to release to you?" asked the governor. "Barabbas," they answered. "What shall I do then with Jesus who is called the Messiah?" Pilate asked. They all answered, "Crucify him." "Why? What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him." When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead an uproar was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. "I am innocent of this man's blood," he said. "It is your responsibility." All the people answered, "His blood is on us and on our children." Then he released Barabbas to them, but he had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. May the living word of God speak to us through these ancient words of Scripture.
There, all washed up, nice and clean, just for you. They were afraid. They were afraid of what the Roman governor would do if he learned that a large group of the people who were in town for the Passover festival were running around proclaiming a man called Jesus as their king. And they were afraid of what the Roman governor would do if that man named Jesus or any of his followers started any type of significant disruption during the festival. They were afraid. And so, to preserve themselves and their interests, they handed that Jesus over to that Roman governor, a man named Pilate. They were hoping, trusting, that Pilate would be more than willing to get his hands dirty and do away with Jesus, since he was the only one with the power and authority to do so. They trusted Pilate would want to get his hands dirty, but Pilate was a guy who kind of liked to keep his hands clean. Sort of. Because see, before he hands Jesus over, he invokes a Roman custom that allows him to release a prisoner to the people during the Passover festival. He gives them a choice between this Jesus and another Jesus, a man named Jesus Barabbas, a violent criminal and thief. But the religious leaders in Jerusalem see what Pilate is attempting to do, and they convince the people that it is in all their best interests for them to ask for the release of Barabbas. When they do, Pilate releases Barabbas to the people and releases Jesus to his soldiers to be executed. But like I said, Pilate's a guy who kind of liked to keep his hands clean. So before he does that, dips his hands in water, says to the people, "I wash my hands of this man's blood. I am now completely innocent in all of this. It's all on you." And the people respond, "Bring it. Let his blood be on us, not just us, on our kids." This scene, this story from Matthew's gospel, is a prime example of something that it is critical for the development of our faith and our spirituality to grasp and come to terms with. And that is the fact that the Bible is usually much less interested in presenting literal historical fact than it is with offering us and challenging us with moral and ethical and spiritual truths. Because the fact is that, yes, the religious leaders in Jerusalem at that time did want Jesus out of the way. They were afraid of what Pilate would do if he learned that people were running around proclaiming this guy Jesus to be their king instead of Caesar. It wasn't the first time they'd seen that. They were afraid that Jesus or his followers would cause some kind of significant disturbance during the festival. They were afraid of all of that for themselves and their interests. It is fact that they had a hand in delivering Jesus to Pilate, because Pilate was, in fact, the only one with the power and authority to do away with Jesus. But from there, Matthew's gospel moves into the realm of challenging us with moral and ethical and spiritual truths. Because the fact is also that most scholars believe that there was no such Roman custom. There was no custom where the Roman governor would release a prisoner to the people during Passover. And if there had been such a custom, the fact is that Pilate would have been about the last person who would have complied with that custom. The fact is that the historical record tells us that Pilate was controlling and stubborn and unusually cruel. So cruel that it is widely believed that shortly after Jesus' death, Rome would recall Pilate as governor of that territory because of his excessive cruelty. Think about that. How cruel do you have to be recalled by the Roman Empire? Pilate doesn't come off as blameless in Matthew's gospel. But Matthew's gospel is a lot kinder to Pilate than the historical record would indicate. And Matthew's gospel is a lot kinder to Pilate than it is to the Jewish leaders and people. See, Matthew's gospel, as we know, like all of the gospels, was written several decades after Jesus' death. And in many places, the gospels project backwards. They address a reality of their time and place it backwards into Jesus' time. Like here. One of the things that is going on here is that in the time Matthew's gospel was written, and as we've mentioned a few times, conflict had emerged and grown between the followers of Jesus after his death, who still considered him to be the Messiah, and the established Jewish community in and around Jerusalem, who rejected that idea. That community where Matthew's gospel came from did, in fact, hold the Jewish leaders and people responsible for the role that they did, in fact, play in Jesus' death. But when Matthew's gospel has the Jewish people say, "Let his blood be on us and on our children," Matthew's gospel is only looking at that from the spectrum of the Jewish community at that time and those in the immediate decades after that they were in conflict with. Those were the Jews that Matthew's gospel was holding responsible for Jesus' death. Matthew's gospel did not in any way mean to suggest that Jews for all time immemorial were responsible for Jesus' death, but as we know, sadly and tragically, this scene and that particular verse have been used throughout the subsequent centuries as a primary justification for violence perpetrated against the Jewish people by Christianity, by Christians, and by Christian-based ideologies. As the Christian community in this time and place, we cannot wash our hands of that. We have to own it, and we simply have to do everything we can to ensure that it stops. At the same time, Matthew gives Pilate a relative pass in all this because the other concern of that early Christian community in those subsequent decades after Jesus' death, besides spreading the gospel, was surviving. And they knew from what had happened to Jesus and other followers of Jesus that they were a lot more likely to survive if they didn't antagonize Roman leadership. Enter the historically unlikely scene involving that Roman custom. And enter the historically unlikely character of Barabbas. But it doesn't make it any less truthful. Barabbas is partly there to help aid in that objective of softening the blow against Pilate. But Barabbas is there for a much more important reason, a much more vital moral and ethical and spiritual purpose. Barabbas is there to serve as a contrast. Barabbas was this character's surname. As we heard, his name was Jesus Barabbas. And in the Aramaic language that Jesus spoke, the name Barabbas breaks down as Bar, which means son of, and Abbas, which is a derivative of Abba, which is an Aramaic word meaning father, or more colloquially, daddy. It also happens to be the term that Jesus uses to address God. So what the writer of Matthew's gospel has done is given us a contrast and given us a choice. Who will we choose as our son of the Father, our Son of God. This man, Barabbas, whose life was centered in violence and self-service, or this man, Jesus of Nazareth, whose life was centered in the rejection of violence and service to others? Who will be our Son of God? Matthew challenges us to answer. And what will we wash? Three times. That magical biblical number three that means wholeness, completeness, the right amount. Three times in this story, Pilate really washes his hands, or tries to wash his hands of Jesus. Before he ever dips those hands in that water, he attempts to wash his hands by forcing the choice of what to do with Jesus onto the Jewish people. And even before that, in a part of this story that we did not share, Pilate attempts to wash his hands of what to do with Jesus by first sending him to Herod, the Jewish puppet king appointed by Rome for that region. Let Herod decide what to do with Jesus. Three times, Pilate attempts to wash his hands of Jesus. The same way that we sometimes do. The same way that we sometimes try to wash our hands of Jesus, wash our hands of his example, his life, his teachings, wash our hands of what he calls us to do and how he calls us to live, wash our hands of God's ways, the ways that he embodied. We wash our hands, or try to wash our hands of Jesus, in the same ways that Pilate did, by passing that call off to someone else, or trying to force it onto somebody else. It's not my job. Or just plain ignoring it and turning away from it. That call to serving others instead of self-service, rejecting violence instead of embracing it. But not today. Not here. As this community of Jesus' followers, as this community of God's people, we must refuse to wash our hands. We must refuse to wash our hands of others. We must refuse, refuse, and refuse again. We must refuse to wash our hands of those in need, just because they may be of a different color, or a different nationality, or a different sexual orientation, or a different faith. We must refuse to wash our hands of those in need, when and if there is something that we can do. There isn't always, but when there is, we cannot wash our hands. Because the truth is that washing our hands does not make us clean. It doesn't make us morally, ethically, or spiritually clean. Only one kind of washing can do that. In the Gospel of John's version of this episode, hours before Pilate will, in fact, crucify Jesus, it is Jesus who will be the one to do the washing. Hours before the Roman Empire and the Jewish community at that time will wash their hands of Jesus. Jesus will instead take a different basin of water and he'll kneel down with it. And instead of washing his hands, he will wash Peter's feet. He will wash Peter's feet, and then he will tell Peter, go out and do the same. You know that time-honored saying, cleanliness is next to godliness? Not necessarily true. Not morally or ethically or spiritually. It really all depends on what we choose to wash.